Anthropologist Hugh Raffles has written a quirky book about bugs called Insectopedia. He's been fascinated by bees for a long time, and in particular with the work of the celebrated bee biologist Carl von Frisch. Raffles told Steve Paulson that Frisch made great strides in understanding what he called the language of bees, and that he had a close personal bond with them.
It's very fascinating reading von Frisch's work, and he talks about bees as his comrades sometimes, as his little friends, all these kinds of things. And he gets very attached to them, and he sort of laments when he has to, when he does kill them. I mean, of course, the only point I don't want to make is that this doesn't stop him killing them, of course. And he kills, you know,
for the sake of science, right? When kills for the animals, sake of science, yes.
Yeah, but he's very attached to them. And part of what I think makes him so interesting is that the impulse with von Frisch is always to show how much they can do and how much they know. You know, it's not this negative impulse of showing what they don't know. He's always trying to demonstrate what they do know. He's very aware of how sensitive they are and how adaptable they are. So at times he worries about, you know, creating these, well, he calls them scientific bees, bees that are responding to him as the investigator and so effectively giving, you know, giving him what he wants. I think he develops this real, I don't know, this affinity to them because he's so close to them and spends so much time with them. Hmm. And sometimes you feel that he's really thinking with them and, you know, really almost becoming part of them, you know.
Mm-hmm. But part of what makes this subject so interesting, I mean, what bees do, the behavior of bees, is the particular dynamic between the individual bee and the hive as a whole, because now it's clear that the individual bee cannot survive without the hive. I mean, there are these are social insects and they are dead without the hive. Mm-hmm. But yet it would seem to be a mistake also just to say that individual bees are just cogs in a machine. It's more complicated than that.
It certainly seems to be, yeah. There's a lot of individuality in bee behavior, which is something that we often don't seem to think about. There's, for instance, a large period of time, maybe 40% of the time, when they're not being busy bees. You know, they're not running around, you know, being economic actors, but they're actually just, really, it's sort of like bee downtime when they're in the hive being social. And it's unclear what they're doing, but that's a very large proportion of their time.
You go further than that. You suggest that the repertoire of bees goes beyond strictly functional explanations and biochemical predictability. In other words, there might seem to be something beyond the strict evolutionary imperative as to what bees do.
Yeah, I certainly think that. If you look at the decision-making that bees do. And the best example of this is nest location and decisions around finding a new nest that was originally carried out by Martin Lindauer, who was von Frisch's main prominent student. It really suggests the capacity of bees to make individual decisions and then arrive at consensus between them through a process of argument, which is something which is quite unexpected and it seems very, very sophisticated. There's quite a lot of people who think this is very sophisticated.
Well, you're going to have to explain that. How do bees make individual presentations and then argue their case?
When a nest gets too large, it fissions, it divides. And part of the hive will fly off with the queen, and they'll try to locate a new site.
And to put this in perspective, we're talking enormous numbers of bees. I mean, this could be 30,000 bees flying off, and they have to agree on where to set up the new nest.
Yeah, and then the human mechanisms for this tend to be quite authoritarian. Right? It doesn't seem that that's actually the case with bees. So they fly off, and they find a temporary resting place. But it has to be temporary because they're unprotected. So, you know, we know this because there's often panics because bees are seen, I don't know, like on a high street somewhere or something, you know, they're on a lamppost or on a mailbox and everybody freaks out because there's all these bees there. But those bees will be bees which have divided from their hive and half or some large proportion has moved away from the hive and they've taken the queen with them and they form a sort of ball to protect the queen. And then, and it's not quite clear how this happens, but scouts will leave that group and they'll go out and they'll look for potential sites for a nest. So they'll find all kinds of places. They might find tree hollows. They might find holes in a wall. They might find chimneys, you know, any kind of thing that might be appropriate. They're looking for something that's dry, that's quite roomy, that's not already got, you know, a lot of ants in it or something like that. But then they'll return to the temporary hive and they'll dance. Effectively, what they'll do is they'll tell the other bees about what they found. And it seems that if they're really, really enthusiastic about it, they'll dance for it very, very enthusiastically. But, you know, multiple scouts have gone out and they've found lots of different places. So they'll come back and you'll get these different bees dancing to try to basically argue for the places that they found. And the other bees will, you know, observe this. And over time, and this can take a couple of weeks, what you'll get is sort of a debate. So scouts will go out and they'll look at sites that other bees have found, and they might change their mind. They may think, oh yeah, this actually is better than the one that we found. And so they'll come round over time. At a certain point, you know, as I said, this can go on for quite a while because there can be, you know, a large number of potential sites. Over time, they'll reach consensus. And it might not be that, you know, every bee has given up arguing for its favorite place, but the ones which, once a decision's been made, then those bees will come along with the others, and the whole group of bees will fly off and they'll find that nest. So the nest which, you know, everybody decides is the good one. So over time, a majority of the scouts will have visited, you know, they'll have visited a large number of sites, but they'll have visited the site which becomes the chosen one, and they'll come back and, you know, there'll be a sort of, you know, a tide of support for that particular site.
Well, there is a profound question here about how much we will ever know about bees, because some of what they do seems to be beyond science, beyond the capacity of science to explain.
Well, that's probably the position that I would take. I'm also a little wary of that because, you know, you have to be cautious taking that position that you don't become all mystical about them. I think it's good to go into these kinds of debates with a lot of humility and to think that, you know, humans aren't the measure against which everything else has to stack up, particularly with animals. Animals just fail over and over and over again if we do that. And that seems to be the principal basis of animal research, to test them against the things that we're very good at. You know, we have consciousness, do they have consciousness? We have language, do they have language? We're intelligent, are they intelligent? You know, these things, it's always in our own terms. So I'm very, very cautious about that. And I think that we need entirely different terms in which to think about animals. We need to figure out how to think about them on their own terms, and that's certainly something that at the moment we're not able to do.
Hugh Raffles teaches anthropology at the New School and is the author of Insectopedia. He spoke with Steve Paulson.